All right, welcome back to Book Club. Today we're on day 17, and day 17 largely is around the vice of gluttony. And I think it's always really interesting to me how often we misunderstand both the virtues and the vices, right? So a lot of times with something like humility, which we talked about last week, we hear how we can misunderstand what humility is, which can oftentimes lead to a certain sense of false humility and just thinking that we have to think really lowly of ourselves, right? We think really poorly of ourselves, which is not the case. Similarly, we can misunderstand the vices, right? I remember kind of coming to this conclusion as I was reading about some of the deadly sins and going through the Lenten challenge that we did over at our parish. And I kind of led a weekly group, and then we did like small groups and things like that. And there was one week where I talked about sloth, often referred to as sloth by the more intellectual types. And the interesting thing about sloth is we often just think of it as laziness, but it can, St. Thomas Aquinas kind of describes it actually as like a busyness, right? That even placing things that aren't very important over the most important things, such as prayer, the interior life, our spiritual development, our faith life, evangelization, that's actually what sloth is. That it's not just about us, not just about the things that we're not doing or being lazy or kind of like being fat and sloppy, right? But actually about how we're not prioritizing the right things. We're not putting the first things first. And this kind of goes into gluttony, because we often think of sloth and gluttony going together, because we think of sloth as laziness and gluttony as just overeating. And I think it's interesting because there's definitely a part of gluttony to that, which I think we see here in chapter 17. And I saw something recently that asked the question about obesity. It was actually a non-denominational or like just a Protestant kind of content creator. But he was asking the question, like, is obesity like a serious sin? And I think that's a question we at least have to ask, right? Because we know that gluttony is such a big thing. Now, obesity in and of itself, maybe not, right? If you have like a condition or suffering from an injury or whatever it might be. But I think if we're just fully healthy and we're not taking care of our bodies and really making the most of it, I think that's a core tenet of seeking excellence, right? And I struggle with that myself. I've fluctuated up and down with my weight over the last 3 years since I tore my Achilles, almost 3 years now. And I get it. Like, I understand the struggle with it. I've always had a, you know, mixed relationship with food. Definitely not the healthiest relationship with food. I eat a lot of times if I'm unhappy or stressed or things like that. Eat when I'm bored. And so I get it and understand that. But I think this chapter is really about that, really about our understanding and our relationship with food. And he talks about gluttony of delicacy, not just thinking of gluttony of excess, right? So this kind of shows that the vice really does extend beyond just overeating, just eating too much. It can be a number of different things, right? And so he says, Glubos has this woman, old woman, well in hand, right? So if you remember, Glubos is the tempter for the mother. He says, she's a positive terror to hostesses and servants. Now, we probably all know people who are like that, right? You probably have somebody in your family who you go on to restaurants with, and they're just like embarrassing to be with. The way they treat the wait staff, the classic, like, you're going to send everything back if it's not the perfect way you want it. Or even if you forgot to say something, you're going to, you know, fight against it and send it back, which there's nothing wrong with sending things back inherently, right? But we know people who are just kind of very nitpicky and can't just make a small adjustment or accept something or maybe acknowledge that maybe they forgot to say it in the first place. But he gets to talking here about this kind of, just kind of prideful approach to life, where this kind of, oh, please, please, all I want is a cup of tea, weak but not too weak, and the teeniest, weeniest little bit of crisp toast. You see, acting like, because you're acting for something small, but it's very detailed, right? It's very precise in the way that you want it, as though you're really not an inconvenience. You're really just trying to be simple, but nobody can get it right. And this is how a lot of the virtues always end up feeding into pride, right? We know this. Pride is like the king, vices end up feeding into pride. Virtues do not feed into pride. But we know that humility is the king of virtues. Why? Because pride is the king of vices. And so we know that everything kind of feeds itself back into pride in one way or another. And so, it's really interesting. This kind of all I want state of mind he talks about, saying all I want is a cup of tea. All I wanted was this. And this is the all I want, you know, because I don't relate very much to his mother, as you can imagine. She's like a 20th century British woman, and I'm a 21st century black young black man. And so we have our differences, there's no doubt. But this all I want stuff, what I was trying to think as I was praying through this and thinking about this chapter, it's like, when do I hear myself saying that? When do I say all I want, all I want? And I literally did it yesterday. Yesterday, I had a day planned. I had the day off. And so I was kind of planning on getting a lot of content done. I was going to record videos. I was going to get some writing done. And some unforeseen events came up. Jordan was sick. And there was just a number of different things that happened that just really derailed the entire day. And I find myself when I start to become a victim, right? When I start to feel sorry for myself, just all I wanted, God, all I wanted today was to record videos. All I wanted today was to do content. All I wanted, all I wanted, all I wanted. And you start to see, okay, I find myself in this kind of same state of mind, right? With this all I want, all I want, all I want. And just generally feeling sorry for yourself, instead of feeling sorry for myself. And so you see this here, right? You're basically becoming a victim to the circumstances. That's what she's saying. All she wants is a cup of tea properly made or an egg properly boiled. It says, but she never finds any servant or any friend who can do these things properly, quote unquote, properly, right? And I love this part. He says, she's thinking about her past, right? She remembers a past. A past described to her as the days when you could get good servants, but known to us as the days when her senses were more easily pleased and she had pleasures of other kinds, which made her less dependent on those of the table. I think that could have been, I could do probably a 30-minute podcast on that, that little sentence alone, dude. A past described to her as the days when you could get good servants. So we always have this kind of fond memory of the past. And this is something I think we kind of often find ourselves in. A lot of older people, you know, the boomer jokes of like, back in my day, everything was better. And sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. But I think what's really interesting here is to think about how we've manufactured things in the past to be better. And we've thought about, we compare them to the present with these really unrealistic understanding of what it was. And I just recently heard this when talking about actually criticizing millennials and Gen Zers who say, oh, you know, you guys always make fun of us for the not being able to buy houses, the way we work, whatever, but you guys had it so easy. You didn't have to deal with anything we have to deal with today. And I think it was Douglas Murray who was talking about this. And he's like, oh, yeah, except for that world war they had to put up with. And the Cold War, where for decades people thought the whole world was going to come to an end, right? And so, like, every generation has their own struggles. Every generation has their own difficulties they're going to face. And so we know this, but it's easy just to look back on the past, even a past you weren't alive for, and to kind of romanticize it and put on rose-colored glasses as you evaluate history. But we can sit back there and think about, oh, things used to be good. You used to be able to get this. And ignore the positive strengths of our present time and only focus on the weaknesses, especially when compared to the past. A past that most likely never actually even existed in the first place. Then you have the second part there, where she was more easily pleased. So one, there's something to that. Philippians 4:13, I often talk about this, is one of my favorite passages. St. Paul talks about how he's learned how to be content in all circumstances, leading up to Philippians 4:13, actually. So it's 11 and 12 is where he talks about this, where he's learned how to be content. He's learned how to face plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Right, Philippians 4:13 is a famous verse, but in before that, he says, I learned how to be content in all circumstances and all situations. That is really, really important. Later on in this paragraph, he says, her greed has been one of the chief sources of his domestic discomfort for years. So her greed and this idea that she kind of always wants things to be perfect, even for her son, not only leads to displeasure and unhappiness in her life, but also causes a lot of unhappiness and displeasure in her son's life, which is theoretically not her goal. But she's dealing with this daily disappointment and a daily ill temper because of it, because she's dependent on these pleasures at the table, right? Because when you don't have much else going for you in your life, when you go out to dinner, it's like everything has to be perfect because this is like your thing of the day, right? And so this is why we need things to care about. This is why we need important things to care about and things that we draw pleasure from, because when your cup is full, this is why Christians are, and I think like truly practicing Christians, are the easiest people, right, for waiters to serve. When you see these like beautiful homeschool families and stuff, they're always polite. Why? Because their hearts are filled with joy. Their minds, souls, and hearts are filled with the joy of the Lord. They're filled with the Holy Spirit. So they don't need the perfectly done X, Y, or Z. And if they get something that's not perfect, they can just offer it up and just recognize, you know what, I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to be in good company. Versus if you're just totally miserable, then you're not going to ever think that way. So he says, mere excess in food is much less valuable than delicacy. Its chief use is as kind of an artillery preparation for attacks on chastity. On that, as on every other subject, keep your man in condition of false spirituality. Now, I like this a lot because I've seen this in my own life where when I don't have a positive relationship with food, when I don't have a healthy relationship with food, I also find myself just being more tempted towards lust. And I think there's something really to that. This is why you saw so many monks and holy men and women throughout history really taking seriously doing spiritual disciplines, right? This is why asceticism that's taking place in Exodus 90, whenever you do that, it really has to be paired up with all these other things. Why do you experience freedom? You can't drop the fraternity, you can't drop the prayer, you can't drop the asceticism out of Exodus 90 and still have the same experience. You have to have all three of the legs of the stool in order for it to do what it needs to do. And the reason for that is as you deny yourself sweets, as you deny yourself in the cold shower, as you deny yourself alcohol or whatever it is, you start to build up the idea of denying your body, right? The body becomes subjected to the will. It becomes subjected to the mind, to the soul. And so when you have that, that's when you have things in their proper order. When you have things in their proper order, you always have better outcomes. Let's keep that in mind. I hope you take some time as you pray through this chapter to evaluate just your own relationship with food. I know I'm really bad at saying no to things. I'm really bad at accepting things that aren't perfect. And so I've learned to try to do that in marriage and family life, in restaurants and whatever. And I'm still definitely a work in progress, but I love that this book brings to the forefront and to so much of our attention, so many of these critical aspects and areas of life. So thanks for tuning in today. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless.